You're listening to Air Schooner, listening that moves you. Hosted by Stacy Waite and Scott Winter.
It's hard in some ways to call environmental writing a movement or to categorize it because what isn't connected to environment? What isn't connected to breathing or drinking water or eating food? In some ways, all roads lead to Rome. And so there are a lot of people doing a lot of interesting things that you can read through that lens.
She's Stacy Waite.
And he's Scott Winter. We're focusing today's show on environmental works by two writers who were strongly influenced by the Pacific Northwest, one who was just blown away by the solitude and beauty of Oregon, and another whose life was formed by human contamination of that beauty in Washington.
Kathleen Flinigan is Washington State's poet laureate and has published two poetry collections. Her first, called Famous, won the Prairie Schooner Book Prize in Poetry. Her second collection, called Plume, was selected by Linda Beards for the Pacific Northwest Poetry Series. Flanagan's poems have appeared in the Iowa Review and the Writer's Almanac. She's a poetry teacher and is also co-editor and president of Floating Bridge Press.
Flanagan has written that she came to poetry late in life, after working 8 years as a civil engineer and hydrologist, 3 on the Hanford Nuclear Reservation, which has loomed over her since her childhood.
I grew up in Richland, Washington, which is the bedroom community for the Hanford nuclear site. And Hanford was initiated as part of the Manhattan Project during World War II. There was Los Alamos, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and Hanford, Washington. And Hanford had the riskiest and dirtiest work of creating that new element, plutonium. That's the history behind the Hanford site. When they first built it, it was just for the war effort, but then, of course, after the war came the Cold War, and so they, rather than closing up shop, they actually expanded from 3 original reactors to 8, and then a 9th in the late 60s. You can imagine that culture, that it's really they're always looking for industry there, but all they really can ever seem to get is more work around plutonium, and it started out as kind of a new, exciting industry. A lot of people attracted to that field originally were kind of sort of folks that are doing computer work now, but it has become more and more conservative with the years and more entrenched, and it's sort of changed the face of that community significantly. And, we were told a story growing up that everything was safe and all was well, and they were the experts, and I totally believed that. And I, in fact, after graduating with an engineering degree in 83, I went back. That's the only place I had a job, actually. And I took that job, and I worked out at Hanford for 3 years as an environmental engineer doing groundwater monitoring and so forth. I liked the people I worked with. They're great. But the site itself is, full of contamination. And in 1988, they finally shut down all the plants. The Department of Energy calls it the world's most contaminated place. It has a lot of work to be done there, billions and billions of dollars of cleanup, and no end in sight. So there's this very colorful and long and complicated and political history there, and I'm just trying to sort of understand who I am in terms of that place and what it meant to me growing up and what it means to me now. I wouldn't have written about it at all until my parents passed away. It would not have even occurred to me to write about it, in fact. At some point, they say you're supposed to write about the thing that scares you or that you don't want to write about. And I guess I kind of took that on a couple of years after they both passed away and started writing, and then all of a sudden I couldn't stop writing about it. But I wasn't sure what I thought about it all. The first poems were kind of memoirs. And from that, I moved into poems based in research, trying to investigate what actually went on out there and how I was responding to that. And people kept saying, "Aren't you angry?" I would think, well, sure, I must feel that. I would, by other people who've written about it, actually not many poets have taken this on, but a few people have. And I'd try on that, like, oh, I'm angry. And so I'd write a bunch of angry poems. But those kind of, you know, I wrote so many poems that ended up in the trash because they weren't quite authentic. And I think one of the big surprises for me is in the end, I really am not angry about it. And I do feel betrayed, but in the end, I think I'm really feel that's self-inflicted. I think we betrayed ourselves. And I just don't quite know what to do with that feeling, just kind of work through it.
Flanagan's father was a PhD-level chemist at Hanford, and Flanagan's best friend, Carolyn, who lived three houses up the street, had a father who worked as a laborer at Hanford and would eventually start a labor union there and serve as its president.
During her interview with Air Schooner correspondent Adrian Kesters, Flanagan shared the poem to Carolyn's father, Thomas Jerry Dean, 1929 to 1988.
On the morning I got plucked out of third grade by Principal Wellman because I'd written on command an impassioned letter for the life of our nuclear plants that the government threatened to shut down, and I put on my rabbit-trimmed green plaid coat because it was cold and I'd be on the televised news overseeing delivery of several hundred pounds of mail onto an airplane bound for Washington, D.C., addressed to President Nixon, who obviously didn't care about your job. At the same time, inside your marrow, blood cells began to air, one moment efficient, the next a few gone wrong, stunned by exposure to radiation, as you milled uranium into slugs, or swabbed down train cars, or reported to B reactor for a quick run in, run out. And by that morning, Mr. Dean, the poisoning of your blood had already begun.
While Kathleen Flanagan grew up and still works in southwestern Washington, a region that colors her work, Steve Edwards' first book was painted by the backcountry of southwestern Oregon.
Edwards won the Marjorie David Boyden Wilderness Writing Residency in 2001, and that gave him 7 months in a backwoods Oregon cabin alone without electricity or neighbors. Recently divorced, Edwards ditched his teaching job in Indiana to be the caretaker of that 92-acre homestead along the Rogue National Wild and Scenic River.
In his interview with Scott, he said that deer, bears, and silence were his friends. Afterward, he couldn't stop thinking about his backcountry time, so he wrote the book, Breaking Into the Backcountry, which he talks a little bit about right here.
I'll tell you my favorite story from that place. One day, I was coming home from a walk, and I was feeling lonely, depressed, as normal. And I looked out at the far ridge, it was called Rattlesnake Ridge, and a huge cloud had kind of sunk down on the ridge, and it was at sunset time, and so these huge rays of the sun were, you know, just blasting into this cloud, and it turned it this incredible color of pink. And it was so close to the ground and so big that the grasses in the meadow turned pink, the trees all around me kind of turned pink, my own skin started to glow, and the red dirt sort of logging road that I was walking at, powdery dirt, started to glow. And I thought to myself, geez, you know, how many things as beautiful as this have you seen and already forgotten? You know, self-pitying. And then this voice, I don't know where it came from, out of the grasses, from the cloud itself, it said, the point isn't to remember. The point is to try to live a life that's as beautiful as this thing that you see right now. And if you can do that, then you get to share it with everyone that you run into. And it was kind of a defining moment for me to realize that, you know, and even in solitude like I was, 45 miles from town, you're never alone.
Edwards is now working on a new nonfiction book about his grandfather's appearance on the cover of Life magazine in 1942. Edwards has published stories in places such as Silk Road Review and Acme Online. He teaches English at Fitchburg State University, where he lives with his wife and son. He talked to Scott about the ways his life as a writer, teacher, and father were intimately connected for him.
My son right now, he has a language delay, and we're trying to teach him how to make stories. So we'll use a little doll. Oh, this little doll's going to the grocery store. He's going to buy some apples. You know, we are bringing him stories as a way of bringing him into our shared reality. You know, we want him to join us through language. And I think environmental literature, just like literature that has an emphasis on class issues or gender issues, it helps us re-see the world, helps us re-examine old tropes that may not be doing us any favors in terms of understanding how to exist in concert with the world that we've been born into.
While Edwards teaches and works on his book, he also maintains a blog called The Big Quiet, Reflections on Nature, Home, and the Writing Life. He shared a recent post with us that he wrote after reading some work by 19th century nature writer John Muir.
It's 1856, and you're traveling by wagon train across the Great Plains en route to California with dreams of starting an apiary in the Sierra. In the back of your wagon are four unruly, ever-buzzing swarms of honeybees in their hives. Each afternoon, you release them to the fields to forage on wildflowers, scurf peas and clover, milkweed, evening primrose. One by one, the bees spit out of the hive and buzz off, dissolving to specks in the distance. You are very far from home and hungry all the time. The afternoon hours, when you let the mules wade to their knees in the creek and drink long and hard, are empty hours, contemplative. Watching them go, you have no guarantee that a single bee will return, but you send them out. And early each evening they return, their hairy legs dusted with pollen, their crops full of nectar. They return, as though siphoned home by the dusk, to waggle and dance their maps of the flowers. And as it is with bees, so too with words. On your journey across the blank page, you travel hard all morning, with no thought of the family you left behind, or your final destination. You train your sights on only the wildest pastures. When the time is right, go ahead. Open the swarming hive of your heart and stand back to glory in the spectacle. The words have their own distances to travel and desires, and they know better than you. Once they have gone, trust that they will return with insight, nuance, meaning. Tomorrow, send them out again.
You know, Scott, while car camping is the closest I've really ever been to living in nature the way Edwards has, he does make that environment sound pretty compelling to me.
Yeah, it's compelling to me too, and I'm even, you know, further from nature than you. As Jim Gaffigan once said, his parents never took him camping because they loved him. You know what I'm saying? We want to thank both Steve Edwards and Kathleen Flanagan for being on Air Schooner today.
And thanks to Adrian Kesters for an interview with Kathleen Flanagan. And thanks to you for listening to Air Schooner.
Look for Prairie Schooner at the upcoming AWP conference in Boston, March 6th to the 9th, 2013. Our staff members will appear on several panels, including a reading celebrating the 10-year anniversary of the Prairie Schooner Book Prize series. Head to our table to check out the new Prairie Schooner app for iPhone and iPads, or to pick up a free set of Air Schooner headphones. Want to enjoy Prairie Schooner on an e-reader? Now you can. Visit Amazon.com to buy the current issue of Prairie Schooner for only $6.99.
Air Schooner is a bi-weekly product of Prairie Schooner and produced with research support from James Redd, Ted Wheeler, and Marianne Kunkel. Production assistants are Catherine Larson and Franny Sprowls. Technical support comes from Rick Alloway of the University of Nebraska-Lincoln's College of Journalism and Mass Communications. Air Schooner is produced by Scott Winter and the brainchild of executive producer Kwame Dawes.